Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Well, that was an exhilarating Saturday of the U.S. Open on an increasingly crispy Pinehurst number two. Bryce DeChambeau earns a 3-under 67, and now he will take Rex a three-shot lead into the final round of the 124th U.S. Open. We'll be paired in the final group with Matthew Pavon. Pretty good day here at Pinehurst. What were your big takeaways?
Great storylines. You look at what Bryson was able to do today. Certainly, you look at his putting. We're always going to focus. At the end of this week, we're going to look at driving one way or the other. Because you look at it right now, Rory McIlroy, Bryson DeChambeau, they're 1 and 2 in strokes gained off the tee. I think this is going to be a narrative that's going to play out through tomorrow. But it was Bryson's putting today. He made some crucial putts. Not necessarily birdie putts, but he made some crucial putts when he absolutely had to. And in true Bryson form, as if on cue, because we've missed him and we haven't had enough of this lately in our lives. He ended up with some sort of injury, had to get some treatment. I believe it was after he birdied the 11th hole and was going to the 12th hole. Didn't seem to hold him back. Apparently, he's been having some sort of hip issues. But it's all of the drama. We've talked about this a lot. It's all of the drama. It's all of the antics. It's all of the science. It's all of the different thinking that we came to love about Bryson DeChambeau, and that when he joined LIV Golf, quite frankly, we missed it.
The circus, the drama, it is a right hip issue, Bryson told reporters afterward. It's not that much of a concern. He does have his trainer on site. His trainer actually was walking inside the ropes for the last 9 holes just in case he was needed. Per USGA rules, Bryson was allowed to receive 2 sessions of a 5-minute treatment. By my record, he only needed one of those. That was on the 11th hole, sort of gutted it out over the remaining 6 or 7 holes. But you could tell that he was definitely hindered, perhaps not in driving distance. He was bashing, I think he averaged 344 yards off the tee in the third round, but he definitely missed some shots right, which in talking to his caddy and his trainer afterward, that was an indication that he was feeling a little bit on the downswing. Again, he did not think that this would hamper him for the final round. Plenty of time now, roughly 16 hours before he'll need to get ready for the final round. I was struck, Rex, by the last 6 or 7 holes, the drama that unfolded there. Missed opportunity on 13, but bounced back with an incredible shot out of a sandy area on 14. Great up and down on 15. The out of nowhere double, just when it looked like Bryson DeChambeau might be anywhere from 4 to 5 shots clear the next closest contender, gives 2 back and then hits a pitching wedge. Again, a pitching wedge on a 190-yard par 3 on 17 to increase his lead by 3 shots. This is the Bryson that feels unbeatable when he's second in the field in strokes gained off the tee, hitting it as far as he does, typically as straight as he does, and then pouring in putts like he is. I believe he's ranked inside the top 5 in strokes gained putting as well. That combination, just as it proved at Wingfoot, is just exceedingly difficult to beat.
I mean, we'll see. If you look at the leaderboard behind him, and I'm sure we're about to get to that, there are a lot of stacked players back there. You have Rory McIlroy, you have Patrick Cantlay, you have Hideki Matsuyama. You and I can probably have a really interesting conversation about how far back at this point with only 18 holes to play is too far back, but I tend to agree with you. This is Bryson, not necessarily at Wingfoot when he won the U.S. Open there. I felt like that was a different model, whatever point version we want to refer to that as. This is a new version. And look, he is still the scientist. He's still going to be the one that drills down into equipment the way no one else does. He's still the one that drills down into the math of the game like no one else was. But it seems to me he's more at peace with himself. It seems to me, and he actually got a little emotional tonight, and he threw the number out there that 3 years ago he was a different person, quote unquote different person. And I think that's a direct response to the way he was trying to change the world. And we've addressed this before, like he was going to either try to reinvent the game or he was going to ruin the game. There was going to be nothing in between. And I think what he's referencing in sort of that time frame 3 years ago was the idea that he couldn't understand why other people couldn't wrap their minds around what he was trying to do and why he was trying to do it. And now he's gone on another journey. He joined LIV Golf. I think he probably missed the limelight a little bit. I think he missed the arena a little bit. And he learned a lot about himself, is what it seems like at this point, that he doesn't need golf to be happy, but he certainly is fulfilled by what he's able to do on the golf course. Someone asked him tonight in his press conference, why do you like tournament golf? And he didn't even let the question get out. And he blurted out the 14th hole. Like, that's why I love this. I love the idea that I'm going to put myself in this arena and make myself perform. And on the times I'm able to pull it off, that's what gets me going. That's what I live for.
I mean, he's a vastly different player, even if the stats are similar in terms of driving distance based on what he was doing at Wingfoot. If you remember that golf course that year, the fairways were so fast and they were so tight that everyone was missing fairways. And so it became abundantly clear that Bryson's bomb and gouge strategy was going to pay off. So essentially just hit it as high and as far as you can, wedge it onto the green and try and make your birdies or pars that way. That strategy does not pay off at a course like Pinehurst. We sort of saw it in the sense that he was hitting it so far down there on 14 and 18 as examples, where he's getting such a high lofted club on there that he can still make it work. But Bryson is preaching a different strategy this week. He's preaching more control. There's certainly more comfort in his equipment. When I talked to his caddy, Greg Bodine, for about 10 minutes on the practice area, as he was waiting for Bryson to hit some balls in the fading daylight here, he was describing to me the equipment changes and how it has impacted Bryson's game. With the crank head driver, it's essentially a long driver's head on a normal driver shaft. And so there are sort of corrections that the club face is making, so he can never hit it you know, terribly offline. The rationale and the thinking made you wonder, like, why doesn't everyone put this in play? But the fact that they can counter correct even the slightest miss hits, of course, the USGA will probably crack down on that driver head sometime in the next decade. Same thing with the 3D irons and the bulge face and how that has sort of taken sort of the big miss out of Bryson's game. And again, he has always been an above average putter, and he continues to be here this week at Pinehurst. I'm with you on the emotional aspect as well. He's clearly thriving with the crowds here. I would actually say that he's the crowd favorite, even slightly over Rory McIlroy. And Rex, I think there's obviously a showman's aspect to Bryson. There's certainly a sense that he's missed it, but I sense that he's changed because of LIV Golf and the fact that he has teammates, whether it's Paul Casey, whether it's Charles Howell III, whether it's Honor Bond Lahiri. He is always surrounded by someone who has his best interests in mind and his and theirs. According to his caddy, Greg Bodine, that has been a big part of Bryson's renaissance over this past year or two.
I'm going to push back a little bit on this, and I'm not quite sure the teammates who are around him. You talk about Paul Casey and Charles Howe and Honor Bond Lahiri. I'm not quite sure this isn't a brotherhood. Like, I don't know, having his best interests at heart is the right way of saying it. I think he's part of a team, and sometimes
it's a built-in support system.
Someone has your back, and sometimes that's someone's in your face, and that's someone's telling you that sounds ridiculous. And I can tell you that conversation has happened within that team room quite a bit. I know that firsthand, where he'll say something and everyone's around him will just be like, no, we're not going to do that. That's ridiculous. And I don't know that he had that in his life before he landed on LIV Golf. He had a lot of people around him that depended on him as an economy in and of himself. And they don't tend to tell you no in that situation. I'm sure they do have his best interest in heart, but you're probably not going to tell him no if he goes off on one of his tangents. Whereas these teammates do. I will also push back on the idea. I don't know that he's more popular than Rory McIlroy. I was a little heartbroken that Matthew Pavon is a really, really cool story. And I can't wait to see how it plays out tomorrow and the rest of this season. But I wanted to see Rory and Bryson in the final group so we could see firsthand exactly how is this playing out now? Because Rory is almost always the sweetheart when it comes to fans. And it doesn't matter where we are. It seems like he is the sweetheart. And it would have been an interesting sort of litmus test of exactly how far Bryson's stock has risen and maybe how far Rory's stock has dropped. Along those lines, I'm going to transition here and pull back the curtain just a little bit, because we did a good solid minutes on last night's podcast because, quote unquote, breaking news came through early in the podcast. I don't know if anyone noticed, but my colleague here said that Rory would be playing with Patrick Cantlay. And we took a deep dive into that. And then we realized after the fact, after we've already uploaded the podcast and I'd moved on to my duties with Live From, and Ryan had started writing, that no, they actually weren't paired together. So we had to circle back around and fix it and cut it all up. And you did that. You did a fine job. Now I'm wondering to myself, maybe we can just take that cut 10 minutes and slide him in here since Rory is playing with Patrick Cantlay.
I am a very amateur audio editor. Don't have any formal training. Basically, what I've learned is how to edit on Audacity through YouTube videos. I did the best I could.
I'm sure you did. It was
a 5-minute discussion. That is exactly why you did not record the podcast before the final round, before the round is over. Matthew Pavon bogeyed his last two holes to blow up what was a Patrick Cantlay, Rory McIlroy pairing in the third round. You're exactly right. We will get it in the fourth and final round. Both of those players are 3 shots back. I do think, Rex, that's such an undercard now. Yes, obviously, it would have been great to see Bryson and Rory head-to-head. That's not how it is going to shake out. I think now that those players are so desperate for Cantlay to win his first major championship, for Rory to win his first in 10 years, any sort of drama that they have had built up from lingering from the Ryder Cup or the PGA Tour Policy Board, unfortunately, gets swept in the rug, and those guys are going to be shaking hands on the first tee and probably not talk again on 18. They're going to be so concentrated in their business. And I think that's an unfortunate subplot because it would have been a lot more fun on Saturday than it would be on Sunday when they're trying to win a major championship.
Yeah. That's why that conversation. I encourage everyone to look in the trash bin of history, and that's where that conversation ended up. But you're absolutely right. There was going to be so much intrigue to go along with that. You go back to last year's Ryder Cup when on Saturday afternoon, whatever it is that happened on the 18th green, and then Rory drug that into the parking lot and took it out on poor Bones McKay, and he just happened to be the first American that he was going to let loose and give him all his emotions. And then, of course, what's going on behind closed doors with the policy board, and by all accounts, it's Patrick Cantlay who did not want Rory back on the board. Not sure why, not sure what the motivation was behind that, but I tend to agree with you on this front that you're right. It seems like there's other things swirling about now that are much more important. That being said, and Rory was asked this point blank, how hard were you pushing on the 18th hole? He had a look at birdie that he knew was going to get him in that final group. How hard were you pushing for it? And he said, yes, I would have loved to have done that. That's exactly what I was trying to do. However, he also put it in context that maybe being in the second in the last group won't be that bad. You pointed out. So we have right now, it is going to be a 3-shot spread between Bryson DeChambeau, Matthew Pavon, Rory McIlroy, and Patrick Cantlay. On this golf course, that could be gone on the first hole. So I don't think anybody who's 3 or 4 or even 5 shots back right now is thinking to themselves that, oh, I can't do this. Bryson's going to have to help me out. This golf course will dictate what happens.
Historically, 4 is the magic number, where each of the last 25 U.S. Open champions have been at or within 4 shots of a lead heading into the final round. So this is essentially a 4-horse race at this point. I think it was, if you're a Rory McIlroy fan, that last hour had to have been agonizing to watch. The 2 late bogeys, it looks like we're going to get Rory Bryson in the final. It looks like Rory could potentially get in the house at 6, ends up with 4, had a couple of really loose iron shots. He was really struggling with like that flaily right miss all day with his irons. Even if he did hit the green, it wasn't particularly close. That cost him on 15. That cost him on 17 as well. He just wasn't quite sharp enough. And if you're looking for a little bit of an obstacle he's going to have to overcome in the final round, it appears to be his putter. His putter has gone pretty cold over these past couple rounds. When you think back to the 2022 Open Championship at St. Andrews, that was the reason why he couldn't do any better than a 70 that day. We think back to last year's U.S. Open when he was unable to chase down Wyndham Clark. He was continually agonizingly close with putts. If he can catch if his putter can catch fire in the final round, sure, I think he could be a serious threat to Bryson DeChambeau. It would just be a shame if he was unable to capitalize on the incredible driving performance that he has shown through 3 days here. One of the best in his career, lapping the field in strokes gained tee to green to this point. But until his putter heats up, that 3-shot deficit is going to be very difficult to manage. How about Matthew Pavon, Patrick Cantlay? You believing in either of those two players to potentially make a serious run at Bryson?
That rookie move. I'm having to mute it because you're speaking loud and you and I are in close proximity. So I had to mute it. I don't know about Patrick Cantlay because it seems like Thursday was his best day as far as ball striking, as far as putting, everything that goes into it. And what I saw today was a very gritty performance, and that could very well get it done on this golf course tomorrow. However, on a golf course that's not giving up a lot of birdies. So bogey avoidance is suddenly becomes the most important thing that you have to do. And he's normally, he has been pretty good with that all week long, but historically that's not really been his strong suit. And I'm just curious, at what point does that kind of catch up with you? And I'll say the same thing about Matthew Pavon. He is first in the field in strokes gained putting, and he is 90 something this season on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting. So clearly he has found something this week. Normally, those kind of hot stretches don't last that long for a player like this that probably just is not that level. Now, I say all this only to point out that when I asked Matthew, you've never been in this position before, how are you going to kind of tackle it? And he went right back to the idea this is his first year on the PGA Tour, and he was qualified for the signature events. And he said, from the outset, it felt like I was playing a major championship every single week. He went to Bay Hill. It was so hard. You go to the Players' Championship. It was so hard. Fast forward a few weeks. You went to Memorial. It was so hard. Like, all of them feel like major championships. I like the attitude. I'm not sure if it's sustainable based statistically on what he's done on the greens, but I do like the attitude.
Yeah, it doesn't feel necessarily sustainable. I mean, he's first in the field in putting. That's not exactly what you'd like to see. You'd like to see a little bit more balance through the bag. He has not had that. Again, if he has the putting round of his life, maybe he can. I'm expecting the moment to be too big for him. The support in that final group will be overwhelmingly in Bryson DeChambeau's favor. As it relates to Patrick Cantlay, you would think that Pinehurst would be the perfect golf course for him, one that sort of stresses patience, one that preaches discipline. That is Patrick Cantlay's game to a tee. He's not going to overpower any sort of golf course. Again, he's clearly making strides with the work that he has done with Jamie Mulligan that you outlined on the podcast on Friday night, but he's not quite there yet. Just 9 greens in regulation hit on Saturday while making more than 100 feet worth of putts. Again, that does not feel sustainable. This certainly feels, Rex, like this will come down to a ball striking contest, potentially a driving contest between Bryson DeChambeau and Roy McIlroy. Who's your winner? At what number and why?
Oh, I think DeChambeau gets it done. The wild card here is the injury. Like, this kind of cropped up today. I don't think many people saw it coming. We were just watching him on the range. He was doing some sort of dancing move with his trainer, trying to get his hips loose as he's trying to hit some shots after the round. That's got to be the wild card. Like, it had everything just played out normally and we didn't have that 5-minute break with him getting treatment on the golf course, I would have said DeChambeau running away, because he looks the way he's driving the golf ball, same way he did it at Valhalla, and here he seems to still have the same control. And the putts that he's making, not necessarily birdie putts again, but it's clutch putts that you want to look at. Like, I'm not quite sure anyone could have caught that, but there is that question mark that's hanging over it now. And as I pointed out, the people behind him all know this. Like, they know that all it takes is one bad hole, and suddenly this is a wide open race. So I'm going to lean into Bryson DeChambeau, but not nearly as boisterously or as loud as I would have otherwise.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair concern. If Bryson's downplaying it, if his caddy's downplaying it, if his trainer's downplaying it, you know, maybe that's for public consumption. I have a hard time believing that a player who was absolutely bashing it over the past 6 or 7 holes, while quote unquote hampered with this injury, won't be at full fitness when it comes to the final round on Sunday. I think the big wild card, Rex, is if Rory gets a hot putter. He is driving it so dominantly, hitting it so long and so straight. If his putter catches fire, I think he's the most feared guy on that leaderboard. Obviously, again, as we just outlined a couple of minutes ago, that has been the bugaboo, where Rory can be in a chasing position, he gets close enough, and then there's some sort of late stumble that leaves him agonizingly close. It certainly feels like that's possible again Sunday at Pinehurst, does it not? Where he makes a couple early birdies, everyone gets excited, and then he makes a boneheaded mistake on 13, for instance, where he doesn't carry the ridge, slides back down, makes a sloppy bogey, and that derails any sort of momentum. I hope I'm wrong, because a Bryson Rory 2-hole aggregate playoff would be great.
Oh my.
But the way that Bryson is playing right now, the weapon that he is wielding with his driver, the height that he can hit his iron shots into greens that are getting increasingly crispy, coupled with a very solid putter and a great game plan with him and his caddy, Greg Bodine, I think this is Bryson's time to get his second major championship. Anything else for the people before we sign off for this Saturday edition.
Why would you ask about a double bogey in that situation? Just why? Why would you do that?
So a little bit of a background here. Shall we get into it, Rex?
Make it quick. Go.
We were on the 16th hole. We have one of these radios in which we could listen to the Sirius XM broadcast.
Not we. Let's be clear. Doing the royal we. Not we, you and I, the royal we. Go on.
Yes. I was listening to the broadcast, and on the broadcast, Brian Katrick said that the three previous U.S. Open champions at Pinehurst did not record a double bogey in their victories. That, of course, is Payne Stewart, Michael Campbell, and Martin Kaymer. I blurred aloud to Bryson DeChambeau's agent, Bryson does have a double this week, right? Why would you say that? Was the response to that? I said, well, Bryson's obviously not going to make double from here. I'm just asking. I haven't watched all 54 of his holes to this point. Bryson ends up not carrying the ridge, does not end up chipping on and missing a five-footer. And, of course, Bryson DeChambeau makes a double bogey. Things were a little bit tense in the Bryson DeChambeau camp afterward. Hopefully those sort of vibes do not permeate deep into the camp and affect his outcome and his performance on Sunday. What do you think, Rex? Any thoughts, any words of wisdom for the people at home?
You're the guy that tells the pitcher he's got the no-hitter going in the sixth, aren't you? Yeah.
How's your arm feeling? You haven't given up a hit yet. No, not my finest moment. Not my finest moment, but it should be a great final round. Looking forward to it. Should be another beautiful day at Pinehurst. Blazing hot once again, 90 degrees, little wind. Can't wait to do it again. Rex and I will be early Sunday morning from Pinehurst on live from the U.S. Open. Make sure to catch us then. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. NBCSports.com/golf for all the latest news, notes, and updates. We'll be back on Sunday night for a full recap of the 124th U.S. Open. In addition, all the columns and features that we'll be pounding out for you guys. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Talk to you guys Sunday night.